Welcome, everybody, to Jewish Quest, a podcast produced by the Louis Jacobs Foundation and committed to Rabbi Jacobs's belief that the quest for Torah is itself Torah. My name is Simon Eder, and each week I am joined by a special guest to help us deconstruct that week's parsha, exploring new insights and meaning on the all-important quest for Torah. And it's wonderful to welcome back again Rabbi Nelly Altenberger as we explore together this week Emor, towards the end, of course, of Vayikra. Rabbi Altenberger became the new spiritual leader of the congregation Adas Israel in Middletown in the summer of 2020, born and raised in Brazil and receiving her Bachelor of Arts degree in Hebrew Language and Literature at the University of Sao Paulo, and then a Master of Arts in Rabbinic Studies in 2004 from the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies, and then being ordained in 2006. Rabbi Nelly, warm welcome back to you.
Thank you, Simon. It's wonderful to be here.
We really have quite a challenge, I think, on our hands as we explore Vayikra, and then chapter 21, and those verses 17 to 24. What do we have? No man of your offspring throughout the ages who is a defect shall become qualified to offer the food of his God. No one at all who has a defect shall be qualified. No man who is blind or lame, or has a limb too short or too long, etc. It really feels quite extreme, and of course, at odds with many of the Torah values that we know and hold so dear. I really wonder what you make of these sentences.
I would say that those sentences are one of the most uncomfortable readings, right? Torah has several uncomfortable places, but one of them, for us in general, for moderns, I'd say, it's present in this portion. And I think it's uncomfortable because we do read that all humanity is made in the image of God. And then how come in the temple you're going to have this moment of not accepting this fairly long list of physical defects? And that is not even talking about the right mental challenges or development challenges or anything like that, which for us touches then, I would say, a very specific area of questions, and it should. I'm going to say that the Rashi is going to be even more expansive. In his commentary, he says, you know what? Even any little blemish, even one that comes and goes, let's say a rash or a cut, excludes. So you have the sensation that the temple is this place, at least in Rashi's mind, that it's supposed to be perfect. One of his students, the Behor Shor in France, and this is 12th century, he is going to say that there is a reason there. And the reason is that you don't want just to send anyone representing the people to the king. The king, when he's speaking about France in the 12th century, not a nice place for Jews to live. They're just expelled and called back by Philip II, if I'm not mistaken. So the Behor Shor is saying, look, the king might get insulted if you send someone who has a defect to talk to him. And therefore, the same thing applies to God. That's how he's reading, which doesn't help us in that sense, because what kind of God would you believe would be insulted because someone God creates gets a defect because an accident? And if you think that God is behind everything, so how can God be upset about this? So I have loads of problems with Behor Shor and loads of problems with Rashi, right?
Maybe just in the context itself, this is yet another example of key distinctions that Vayikra wants to make. We've seen it, of course, with skin diseases. We've seen in lots of instances this kind of dividing lines that Vayikra wants to make between the holy and the profane and so on. I wonder, do you see it as a continuation of those kind of themes?
A little bit, yes. I think that you could, in context, when you say, okay, so this is Vayikra, and the text is solely concerned about this perfect place. And then people, I would say, like to look at Vayikra, at the service of the temple, and say, oh, this is a privilege. And rarely are those saying that, remembering that you can, if you do something wrong, if you step out of line in the temple, you die. So there is, I would say, when we say Vayikra likes those distinctions, it's also because Vayikra sees the temple as a very dangerous portal to us. So maybe that's part of it as well. I think we have to think the context, which is, remember, Uzzah in King David's story, Uzzah and I can't remember who else was, the ark is being carried in a cart of oxen and it topples. And Uzzah wants to prevent the ark from falling to the ground. He touches it and he dies. So we're talking a place that if you step out of line, something happens. So maybe that's part of that anxiety. If physically you can't offer the sacrifices precisely how it has to be, then you'll die. It could be that too.
We, of course, normally look to the commentators maybe to redeem these difficult passages. And yet here, as you've clearly said with Rashi and so on, we only get a kind of more extreme embellished understanding, which is perhaps even more problematic. Are there any commentators that redeem this for us?
I don't know if it redeems. I think that one of the things that I was thinking while I was studying Emor was that last week we read, do not curse the deaf and do not put the stumbling block in front of the blind. Right? And as I was talking to my congregants and discussing that portion, they all jumped quite quickly to the metaphors. Oh, you're not supposed to insult someone who can hear it, or the blind might be someone who doesn't know everything, and so on. But I'm thinking, let's first imagine a world where the text is trying to legislate something that is actually happening. Imagine a society in which it is acceptable to play this kind of cruel pranks on disabled. And what does that do, I think, is that we end up seeing the disabled person as not a person, but as their disability. Not everything else that a person can be, but just conscribed into that. And so the text is saying, you can't do it. And I think that there is, if there is a redeeming feature in this, is that we say, okay, so our construct with God is that God loves us all. God is present in everyone, regardless of ability or disability. Human beings have this need of imagining a perfect service for a perfect God. And therefore, that's how we do it. Because humans are in their less stellar moments cruel and take pleasure on diminishing those who have disabilities. I think that's why the rabbis actually instruct us to say a bracha, a blessing, when we see someone who has some disfiguration. And the blessing is supposed to be said with the full name of God, with the full 9 yards, and it ends as Meshane et Habriot, which is translated as who makes a people different. And I think that kind of helps in a way to remind us that however a person is in front of you, they're a person first, created by God. The only thing that happens is that their outsides are a little different, but inside, what they are is connected to God, just as you are. And that might temper and might help us understand better this whole thing, which is not about God. It's more about how human beings work deep inside.
If I'm not mistaken, there's a passage in the Mishneh Torah in blessings, I think chapter that echoes some of that. Is that right? You're able to elaborate?
That's Maimonides. He wants us to, he's very clear about, you have to say that. And to true Maimonidean fashion, he says that you say that when you see someone who lost a limb or became disfigured or were born deaf or blind or something like that. But I imagine, to be frank with you, that you'd say that to yourself. There are people who like to show off their knowledge of blessings and would say that out loud. And I think that's not very good. But I think that when you look at the word that he puts there, Mishaneta Briot, the Briot is the important part there, because we do say that there is such a thing as Kavod HaBriot, the honor to humans. And Maimonides goes on to say elsewhere that judges need to be very careful with the honor of people and not diminish them, because Kavod HaBriot is something so strong, this honor to humans, that supersedes a negative commandment in the Torah. And in the Talmud, when that appears, it's because there's this rabbi who decides to go in a rampage against shakness, mixing linen and wool in clothing. And so he sees a woman going down the market dressed in something that he believes it's shakness. And he runs up to her, tears the clothes off her, of course, gets to be punished. He got to go to jail because he just don't do this thing. And it turns out that the woman is actually not even Jewish. So she's not even under the purveyor of the rabbi. And that is how the Talmud says, and you know what? He shouldn't have done that, because the honor of human beings supersedes this negative command. So you can use shatness, but you're not supposed to go around punishing people, because there is the basic human dignity that you can't take out. So that is, Maimonides wants us to remember, I think, that the most important fact is that regardless of how people look, every single one of us has this inherent honor. And I think he wants us to say the blessing in part because when you can't accept what is, then you can't transcend that reality. I think that's part of how I understand how to deal with this whole thing. You have to accept what is in front of you.
I think it's the Kli Yakar who says that one who's born with a blemish doesn't have a defect on their soul. How do you take his reading, and what do you make of his reading?
But what I think when you read his entire thing, he's going to say, look, this is not a blank statement on any disability. What the text really is saying, it is only regarding bread and flour that are off limits to people who have those defects. And in his head, but he's a rabbi in Prague in 1600s. In his head, he is saying, what? This is not for everyone. Not for everything and everyone. It's just this one thing, that the soul is what's important. I think he is really highlighting that the honor we owe to others is paramount, because defects of a body are completely outside of our control. Defects in the soul, those are things in our control. Those are the ones we feed, and we raise arrogance and anger and cruelty and hatred and lack of curiosity. You name a defect of the soul, and it's ours, it's on us. I think that's part of what he wants to point out. An interesting thing that I think is that when you talk to someone that acquired a disability, I had the merit really of hanging out with people who did part of their own, right, ended up disabled. And they can give you really a profound lesson in humanity and in the strength necessary to live with that disability. Like any of us going through grief and loss, they have those five stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and accept. They have them all. And the most incredible people you'll meet are those who fully accepted what happened to them and found a way of moving forward. And we know, and they know, that they lost something. And at a certain point, they experience God as not exactly, I don't know, a fluffy ball of love, but as a harsh judge. And I think that still they can recreate a life for themselves. I had a person I loved very much. He has since passed, called Chaim. And Chaim had a stroke that left him quadriplegic. And he was one of the most positive people I've ever met. And it was amazing to me. And he had strong opinions about politics and opinions about everything. And he was a wonderful guy. And whenever I went to visit him, and I would visit him about once a week, I was always struck by the fact that I'm not so sure I would be so strong in his position, because they can really show to you something absolutely amazing about life. But you have to get over the fact that they have that disability, whatever it is, to actually meet them as a person and learn with them. So I think that the defects of soul, by looking at people with disabilities with arrogance, and it's something that is really a defect of the soul that you can control, you can transform.
Rabbi Altenberger, thank you so much for discussing and sharing your thoughts on this very difficult and challenging passage, and for taking us on our journey through Emor.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please do remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more information about all of our work at louisjacobs.org and also jewishquest.org. Do tune in again next week as we continue our quest together.